investigations that is that are put on the operational system, that is the system that you would actually have the capacity to deal with that. So that's why we've asked ourselves to be there. So I'm going to hand over. Who's going to lead us in the implementation? Will you then please just introduce the delegation before we start, and then we can immediately start. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. This is a follow-up to the presentation that we did in June, in which we were requested to come back and give a much more clearer presentation to the committee. That's in terms of introduction from the South African Police Service, myself, General Kubana. Accompanied by Brigadier Nisa Pillay, who is the acting head of the Application Portfolio Management Unit after this restructuring, which I can briefly comment at some point. I also have from the supply chain side Lieutenant General Cruza, who is also part of this delegation. We then have Major General Sheldon from the Forensic Services, who is also the head of the quality management component within Forensic Services. And we have legal services accompanied by Major General Jacobs and the DRDI system. And we also have the CEO of CITAM, Mbalo, and the chairperson of the IJF board, Mr. Seba. We are accompanied, as the chairperson has said, by the correctional services. If I can maybe just allow them a chance to introduce themselves, chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name is Bridget Rothman. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner for the Mine Detention.
To get into the presentation, I must say that we have adopted the approach that really what the committee asked of us was to say, if this DNA bill becomes law, how ready are we to implement this approach? So what we have done was to basically look at the whole process of the DNA from beginning to end. We mapped out the process, and we hope it won't be too confusing, because the approach assumes that the process determines the system requirements, and not the other way around. So we are showing the process from beginning to end with various alternatives, and we are showing how the system supports the process as we go along. So I'll be explaining that part as we go along. But first, I just want to allow the CEO of CITA to say a few words in actual, as well as Mr. Silva, that takes it to the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair and General. My name is Stephen Nombolo, as the General has said. I am also accompanied by a few officials from the department, as well as from CITA, board, Dr. Mashau on the left here, and behind me there's no colleague, and Josie, as well as Penelope Shuzi. From the department, I've got Suju and Sandy Mbacha, both of them from the Department of Public Service Administration. I just want to say in the opening remarks that the teams have been meeting since the last time we had the meeting here and deliberated on what are the requirements that need to be done in the presentation and the presentation and answer questions in the presentation.
Well, manage the meeting. You just continue with the presentation.
Okay, thanks, General. Thanks. Members and colleagues, and really there's been are fully mobilized.
We sent the presentation last week to the committee, and we, to my understanding, there were some new changes, maybe additions to the bid, and it stands for this process to make some amendments to the presentation. So it's not very different to what we sent to the committee, but we have updated the presentation to take up all those changes.
Do you have those updated versions yet? Have you distributed them?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, the presentation will go as follows. We're going to deal with the background to the DNA implementation plan, and I'm going to allow General Shane to just take this committee through that. I will then dive into the process flow, to show the process from beginning to end and how, what are the instructions to do, and then we'll talk about the state of readiness of the system and what work has to be done. And then we also talk about the issue of the coding system and some of the work that we've done to enable that. So let me get General Shetty to just take us through the implementation.
This slide that is presented before us is speaking to what the committee has requested the previous time that we are here, and what is just the perspective what is being for so that we can talk to the issues directly. We were requested to bring in support of the implementation of the community builders affected with the meeting to provide those other areas on the periphery that was being tackled and implemented. And the first one was got to do with the training identification or the committee has requested that we should look into the effect of how we are going to be identifying the person with training and the person. We have duly consulted within the department what is called the proficiency batch, or it's tagged as referred to there, is currently in the process of being designed. The tag will then be used as part of the formal dress code of the committee. The next check took you the example of a backup for us. We were requested to bring the examples of the backup for the committee to see. The backup for us are on the reach. The responsible for it just needs to fly this morning with the boxes of the backup for us. So we will talk to the people in the car writing as we are requested before we leave. Although the background form was a memorandum of understanding, the chairperson has just very appeared before the committee, which is at least have a memorandum of understanding between the National Health Laboratory Services and the Department of Health, which has been compiled in terms of training with regards to taking the background form. Also, that I need to present today is the composition of the National Oversight and Ethics Board, the board which should be appointed by the minister. And on the opposite end, we talk to the vice coaching of the bill with regard to the business provision plan in terms of IT systems. This will take the most part of the presentation today, so I think that's why that's now the general one is going to talk to. But I'll also go back and revise the training plan, which the chairperson has asked from the forensic point of view, which is the IT portion there. The last question talks to the project plan in terms of the transversal methods that will influence the implementation of the IDS initiative. As industrial so president of top one general manager refers to that question. So when you go to the next page on the implementation there, the test is going to be we already spoke about. The revised training plan, may I refer that the committee to the attachments and new attachments of what has been presented before today, the implementation plan of the day. Same bill as we presented the last time, it has to indicate the revised training plan with regard to the question that was asked. Who is going to come first? So we need to confirm the actual presentation on the screen. It looks like blue. Mm-hmm. those things you share that is highlighted between the group of the one that was presented beforehand in the previous month, I'm not going to take the rest of it because it's not part of what we actually will request that you cost in terms of the additional. We will then go on to page 3 of the document.
This is what happens when after 2 months, at the last moment, there are additions to documents that should be sent to the committee. Then we have this kind of confusion. It's actually not an excuse for us. Continue, please.
Thank you.
Can I see all members to have it? Can I ask also that the technical team get copies of it as well? Can you give copies to the secretary and to Commissioner Jacobs, please? Continue, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. As part of the delegation there, I think it's called, I don't know if you remember, we went to not introduce the Department of Health Violation and Health Services Laboratories there in the House of Drugs. I'm sure when we get an opportunity to present it, then we share the topic. But this adjustment is looking to their presentation here, number 4, collecting DNA reference of backup samples for forensic analysis. The question was, who is going to be trained? How many of what categories are going to be trained in this financial year? Will they be passed? And what is the plan on subsequent years? And how will it cost us? So this is providing them care in terms of the short term, medium term, and long term, with the consultation with the Department of Health. In this, the main of the financial relationship that will be passed on, they will be able to train 3,000 authorized persons, which priorities will then be given to the detectives, as well as the IT members. The 3,000 will be constituted by members mainly of detectives, as well as IT. The question was, why did you prioritize detectives? What rank of detectives that was prioritized? We went with a framework that says the members from the visible quality arrest, the suspect or an accused person, then they book the person into the system, and subsequently to the detective people that are responsible for taking the fingerprints. It is the best process when the fingerprints have been taken and the person is charged that the backup samples will also be taken. So the people that are doing the collection of prints are detected. That's the question, Chair, that I would just wanted to bring forth. In the medium term, the short term, then in this instance, we talk to the remainder of the financial year. And then, but in the medium term, in the long term, we then have to periods of 18 months and periods of 24 months. We as we have discussed earlier, the committee wanted to know, is this training going to be rolled out also to the people, to the, all the police officers? The answer was yes. We also said we'll introduce it in the basic training for the detectives at the college, as well as the intake, that those numbers will show. So from this financial year, 3,000, but subsequently, it will be 20,000 per annum, given their capacity. Then there are yes in terms of the capacity when this is the case. When you look at the column that is written, the indicator at the bottom, they also the DCS method which we have made provisions for. DCS method in terms of the numbers, how many nurses are there, should they be able to also go through the process of taking samples. There's a total number, as it was indicated, there was 368, but provision has been made for training of the officers. And the last question that I wanted to refer to in terms of the costing on those matters that we were requested to talk to, it's included there as 4.3 in this page. That's I'll take you in the next page as before, extra taking of samples from persons, as well as 4.3. The question was asked, what is your estimated number of persons that you anticipate to take the samples from? When the day is passed, and what was your current estimate? We have estimated that from the charges and that are laid annually, it's about 650 different persons, okay, Anand, which we have catered for. But this part of the presentation reflects the cost. One of the questions that was asked was, what was your CJS expenditure to date in terms of the preparation of the bill, and what are you anticipating going forward? We have dealt with the CI lane as well as the RI lane to date. The cost estimations are reflected there. $85 million for the CI lane, which is currently in process. This machine is processing the crime scene samples, and the RI lane is currently in installation in the Blasphemous and Pretoria lab. This was costed at $169 million. These are now the technologies to process the samples. Now the cost per sample will be based on annual basis on the number of samples that you receive, as well as the cost to analyze the sample. The cost at this stage to analyze a reference sample is $585. So if it's 650,000 samples that you will receive, then it will be 650,000 multiplied by 585. Okay, I think that was all. The rest of the stuff is the background of what was spent today in terms of preparation for the implementation. Currently, we are not processing the reference samples in the anticipated part. These are that we talk particularly to the implementation of the DNA bit. Currently, we are processing the samples from the manual processes in the lab, and the costs thereof are not worked out specifically for the DNA implementation. Only talk to the implementation of the DNA. Okay, the rest of the document looks the only difference to the rest of it is that it indicates the short term, medium term, and the long term. The chairperson had requested previously that in those instances we could indicate what would be short term, those will be achieved quickly or in the short space, and the document was just directed into that format that it is not talking anew to issues that we have presented before the committee. Thank you, Chair. The follow-up of the presentation, if you go back to it, will be the business solution, as well as all the costs associated with the IT system.
Can you just give me an indication, would you like to ask clarity questions at this point before we continue with the IT solutions part of it, and the costing part of it? Or would you like to continue first?
I think let's continue.
Okay. Let's continue, but there's definitely questions.
There will be questions.
I can see the arms. Let's continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. If we go to the first slide of the presentation, which is entitled Taking Up the Book of Family, we apply, Chair, to make it understandable as possible. We have refined it quite a few times to make sure that speaks to the processes. We have a legend on the left-hand side which basically defines what the process means. I think the important thing to note is that where we say it is a system and it is pink in color, it means either it's a system that is existing that needs to be changed, amended, to cater for the bill. If it is blue, it means it's an existing system, but there are no changes anticipated. So how is coin those out as it were? So the process starts at the arrest of a person, which, according to the bill, for Schedule 1 offenses, a sample must be taken, for example, or for all offenses that by regulation which will be published, the minister will have determined that for these offenses also a book of samples must be taken. So that is the decision that will be made at the beginning of the process. So if there are Section 1 offenses, people released on bail when no previous samples have been taken, or someone served with summons, we had a deep discussion here in terms of system requirements, because we felt that there are many variations to this. If someone is served a sample, a summons at home, does the officer carry a DNA kit to take the sample there, or is it we talk about a person's name who is added into the registered sex offenders, so that we have NPA, what are the interfaces from the NPA to the main system of access. So these are all of the issues that will have to be determined as we start the process. When the process kicks off, we then have to verify the identity of the person. Now, we obviously have to link into our databases, the Home Affairs database, HANIF. So these are systems that we have to link into to make sure that we have a proper identity of the person, because when someone is being arrested, depending on the circumstances, they may not be willing to give the identity, so we may have to do our own search using biometrics. And I must say here, at this point, we are looking at part of the IJF. We are looking at developing a unique person identifier, which is going to identify an individual uniquely across the IJF. This is something that we have been discussing over a period of time, because right now, as I'll discuss later, we have various ways of identifying a person in the system. But because of the way it is done now, a person may not be easy to identify a person who has committed a crime before, because of the way the identity is carried out, and also
because the criminal justice revamp has not been done yet. Yeah, let's just continue. Please, let's get to the point. We want to know what you're going to spend on these issues. This is what we want.
Sure.
This is the second time that we're meeting Jenong and Kumani. My patience is actually a bit low. Mm-hmm. I want us to get clarity on what it is. We have to synchronize back the first time because you couldn't answer the question. So let's get to the point.
Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, at this point, we verify the identity of the person through the police database as well as the Home Affairs database. And the next phase is to decide whether the person does have a proof of sample taken before or not. If the person has no sample on the record, we then take the bodily sample. At this stage, we interface to the CAS system, which is an existence, to determine if such a sample exists, and then we go on to take the sample. Now, we are going to implement PCAM, which will enable for us to check the sample as well all the way through the lab process. We record the fingerprint number on the form. Again, when the brigadier arrives with the sample team, to actually demonstrate how this will be done. And then on the form, inside the sample kit, the form comes with the sample kit, this will be recorded, the fingerprint number. Now to link the fingerprint of the person to the DNA sample. And then we record the unique barcode number from the sample kit. Again, this is done on the SLPS-76 form. We then capture the unique barcode number that is on the form, and we record this on our CAM. There is some limited functionality that must be built on CAM to do this. We then capture the fingerprint number. We then create a link between CAM using the MEMS number, and I must explain what this is. For every case, we create a number unique to the person. If there's more than one offender in one case, every offender will have a different number. So that is then captured into the claim, which is the crime information. The sample then goes on to the lab, which is the next slide. If I just go back quickly again to the decision of whether there is a sample existing already or not. If the answer is yes, we then skip that whole process and go straight to the linking of the event number to the target of the sample. We then proceed to the same process. If we go to the next slide, this is now in the left. The sample is arrived in the left, then goes to the processing. Again, an authorized person has to provide the sample key to the authorized occupier the lab. This is checked via the FSL admin system or the PCAM as soon as it is implemented. The FSL will receive and register the book of samples, and then it goes into the DNA analysis. The current and we are looking forward to implementing that one in future. Now I can explain the difference between the two. The digital lab obviously is a system that's been in place since 1999. It is a very, very complex system. Currently it has two main functions. One function is basically the analysis. Sample through the whole DNA analysis. That's the one thing. The second thing, which is probably a lesser requirement, is the database side of the process, where it has the matching of the samples to determine whether there is a need and so forth. So we also determine if the sample is suitable, because it's possible that the sample might be contaminated or whatever, just from a quality perspective. That decision will be made. If the sample is found not to be suitable, we then go back to retake the proper sample. If the sample is found, it then goes the DNA profile is designed from the sample, and then book of samples will get the finalization stage and it will be destroyed at this stage. And then the profile will then proceed on to the next process, which will be the next stage. Then we are also the comparative testing and already believe. And I say I'll also allow the nurses to come in situations that I'm temporary. In the process for him, because as I said, my role is still to provide the system support for so please feel free to check as well. So the comparative searches in order to derive forensic leads, so the sample, the profile now goes into the database, where again the system that is going to be important here is the digital lab and the new forensic DNA database system wants to be used. At this stage, we then compare the analysis, we store the comparative analysis results, and if there are any candidate for the DNA leads, otherwise the sample is actually linked to a case that was recorded. Point in time, then you can see at that point if there is a need. Now, if there is a need to confirm, it then goes to a different process. If there is no need, then the candidate is and it's processed, the report is generated to say that there is no need associated with this particular profile. If there is a need, then that report is issued to the relevant authorities. And as I said, the report is then it goes into the CAD, the business intelligence systems, which are in place, and there are no changes and this is from the system for this. Then the new database system, the NFDD, will also come into play at this point, and there will be obviously different reports coming out of the system. And one of the reports will obviously have to go to NPA in case of the sexual offender registry. So that process of comparative sense ends there when the profile is found in the data. Now the find of the MA profile in the volunteer index, I think this is the part that you want them to clarify in the presentation. It's important to mention that currently there is no expanding of the profile. So we start with the profile, which is in the MA database. The volunteer index, obviously. These are the cases finalized. It has served the purpose, the profile has served the purpose. We then expand the DNA profile from the DNA database. Again, the system dependencies there will be NFDB and the digital lab. And then the process ends there. The digital lab notification generates expands and profile set at the purpose of being excluded. So that is the system dependency there, again the digital lab and the NFDB. Expanding of profiles for the innocent or where cases are withdrawn from the RST index. More or less the same process again. We get the RST index from the NFDB of this standard for now. So the authorized officer at forensic services will be informed or notified when the suspect is not guilty, otherwise they will be interfaced to the justice system or if the case is withdrawn or no prosecution. Again, we have to go back to the criminal information system. As well as the systematic justice and NPA will send those notifications to say the criminal record which is updated must be expunged. Notification is sent to the forensic database, the DNA database, and the automatic expungement will then happen. The system will be updated as the same and that process ends. Loading of forensic DNA convicted offender's data. This again starts from the DNA profile. The suspect is now convicted and sent to the High Court. The system will be updated. The system of this suspect is now being convicted. Authorized officer at NFD Forensic Services will be informed or notified by the Department of Justice that that interface with ICMS from Justice and the current 69 is also sent to FSS. The criminal record will be updated accordingly. And then the notification to the database will be sent as well as to the print system. The profile will be removed from the RST index and automatically loaded onto the computer of the system. So to make sure that this is not have a mix-up of indices. Expanding of missing persons to unidentified persons in the again, the process starts with the DNA profile once in the database. There will be either a case is finalized or the profile is sent to the purpose. Those modifications will be via the FSLF and the installation system as well as the MFDG. Now, we then expand from the missing person unidentified index and the process ends at that point. Familiar setting is a serious violent rape or serial murder cases of identified unidentified remains and missing person process was that the similar effects that were raised on the MFCD were compared to certainly conducted with medium stringent testing. Again, within the MFCD will list all possible leads generated and that are related to the current clinical profile. Kinship analysis will be performed to obtain likelihood ratio with all the processing that will happen within the NFTP system to provide leads to the investigated sectors to follow up. Another process, which is the DNA profile from foreign and international law enforcement agencies. This time we got notification and the manual request to receive forensic DNA profile from the foreign and international law enforcement agencies. We then through our digital lab to get some signal in place to perform the comparative analysis against other DNA profiles of the database. If there is a lead, we then notify the user to the country profile might obtain in the perspective to the international law enforcement agency. That is the one process. The question process, this is when we now load the profile to the foreign agency. The automatic loading of forensic DNA profiles derived from current samples to interpol NDP. This interface particularly relevant where crimes are committed by individuals who are of foreign origin. So the loading means the examiner activates automated loading profiles in coming to interpol. Again, this is by the manual report into the international gateway. Once the NFTP system is in place, this will be automated. Then the forensic DNA profiles to the last instance samples will be loaded on the gateway. So this is the whole process and the system. The interface of the system that are related to the process as we have indicated. And as I said, the main system here is the NFTD, the NFTD database, which is the CODIS or SOL, the page that we talked about in a few minutes. Before I get into that one, we also wanted to just show some of the action steps in time frame. We have planned that within the first second quarter of this year, we will have established a steering committee that will meet monthly to manage and monitor the implementation of the project. Obviously, this will be a simple by the end of September, we will have done the interface to come back to the beginning. I mentioned that we want to scope the functionality of the interpreted booking process to ensure that the person verification, identity verification of the person, will use the unique person identifier. So that is scoping of that will happen by the end of September. And then, Jefferson, I need to mention here that a lot of the systems, as I've indicated in the presentation, existing systems, but there will be changes made to the system. The major one will be the change from this standard to implement the new because the standard system is very, very complicated. So it's not going to go into that blindly. Customize the system according to the requirements, and that will take quite a bit of time. As I said, this standard is playing a major role as well in the lab, where we will implement the different systems in the lab way. So that whole process of building the two systems is going to be quite an intricate process. So there are various interfaces to other departments that are already happening, such as the enhancement of care and linking of the mentors to the facility. All of those things are being paid for under the current service level agreement with CETA, so it's not additional cost currently. We'll perform backup scanners and install these as well by the third quarter. And the project plan for the interface and to bring and the financial admin that is also planned for the financial. So I don't know if I should go to each and every one of them. Suffice to say that the big implementation there will be the lab work and the code slash soft. So those are the two big configuration that you see going forward.
Now, but you please go through all of them because this is what we are interested in. This is what we want to know. The random machine and the time frames. So please go through them. You don't have to go in detail, just take us through this. Don't speak on anything, but take us through it.
In creating the interface, for instance, between the current system and the FSL admin, I'm looking at the ICDMS and FSL admin, we're really costing the man hours, time and material, basically. And as I said, we've got current ongoing SLAs that we're funding the system from. The product plan, interface, the final services, and the national register for such offenders. This is very, very important because we need to ensure that those processes are automated. Because you can imagine if the notification comes, it runs and it takes more than 3 months, which is the time specified in the bill, then we'll be in violation of the bill. So it's important that those processes are automated. So we plan to do that, and again, it is funded from the current that is in SLA. Matter of course. We intend to have a project plan with regards to the personal checking within the CTS cluster by December this year. And the IDF coordinating the process. This is again about the minister making the project that talks about this. Then we intend to have the interface between the government this final again the cost of 10 hours is estimated under the sheet of the SLA. The public plan for the modernization of this panel, as I said, the implementation of LabWare and the new SLA database is going to be a long process. So in the meantime, we've got to and maybe I need to just spend some time as well just explaining why this is necessary. This toilet was implemented in 1999. The way the system is put together now, the architecture of the system, the database and the application are embedded together, which means the system is not scalable. So we need to untangle that so that the database can be scalable because for the kind of work that you want to do, the volume that you anticipate, the digital cannot. So that is why it's so important.
Our linear is more towards the solution, and so we believe that that's
it has also made a very strong case. If as far as they're concerned, the protocol is a solution that does check the cost. And then we go into the phases in terms of prioritized functions.
Can I just ask if we take a 5 minute break, please, ready? And bring it back if possible, and then we can continue with the interviews. Orbit.
I don't know what to do to myself.
Why is that?
I'm not well. Hey.
Added up all the figures. I got a rough adding of 7 469, 679 billion. So, is that the figure? Because there were three gaping holes. You know, there's an initial figure, then there are some listed as annual costs. There are three blanks. There's no estimate for the project plan to configure and integrate the acquired NFDB solution and the solution to the existing SAP systems. That's two. There's no figure for the barcode scanners. So what is the final costing figure? I thought that was what we were going to hear today. I thought that was the whole aim of this meeting. The total, what is the annual then expenditure following on from that, if there's going to be one, there does seem to be, and how do these figures, if you have a final figure, relate to what was passed in the budget in relation to what would be needed for the first year of the implementation plan? And my other issue is the timeline. There aren't any. So are we looking at implementing this in a year, 10 years, 20 years? What? It looks like just a bottomless pit to me.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, first I must be honest, I'm not a little bit the presentation previous one, which we did not accept as better. And that's what worries me. You see, the question has been asked. When we talk about PKM, if you look at it, you said PKM as soon as it is implemented. But last time we gave an impression that PKM is surprising. Now, he also got this thing of when, said NFDD, when is in place. Now, we are expected to approve a bill. We're given very vague. See, when it is, then he talks about this. I think they learned a lot, probably just coming to Parliament all the time. We're talking more like politicians. This is an intricate process. And we want to know when that process is going to be finished. And so, because here we were thinking to finish it. No, it's an intricate process which we must probably those of us who can pray that how long that intricate process is going to take. Prioritize functions dependent on completion. So I'm saying that my question is everything dependent. But if you look at the figures they've given, special training, 3,000 this financial year, then 20,000 per annum. I thought to detect this. It's also, you see, like I need a general. The figures also, as such that you are given figures so that you are not able to say how much, and I think it is deliberate, so that you are not able to say how much this bill, implementation of this bill will cost. That's why I said, Madam, I might be wrong, but the way they presented today is worse than their previous presentation.
Thank you very much, sir. I want to go back to slide number 15. If you see the slide number 15, take modernization of the grid, step left. 30th June 2014. Then you came down to that work configuration. 31st December 2017. What does it mean? That's the first question. The second question is linked to Honorable Malavasi's question. You talk about the steering committee to be formed. Who will be sitting in that steering committee? And how many people would be involved in the steering committee? So two questions, sir. Thanks. We'll come back.
Yeah, there's more questions from members, I'm pretty sure. I also want to start with, Commissioner Zizek, I want to start with your presentation.
First of all, I agree with members that the way that things are put and the fact that you're not even a total as in terms of hardware, software, and then your annual costing. Simple as that. I mean, this complicating this issue so that you hope that we don't understand is not going to work. I'm sorry. We will sit here until we understand. We've got time. We're getting paid to sit here and talk to you about it. But let's start with the training again. 3,000 persons this year. There's no budget for this. We just come out of the budget process. You didn't budget for this, so you're going to get it somewhere. And can I just make a comment as well? Commissioner Kumani, you would keep on referring it will come out of the current CJ is costing. That is not a secret purse. It's not money printed at the reserve bank. It is taxpayers' money. And it should be reflected. It should be reflected. We can't, there's no secret budget that this committee does not know about or should not know about. And the CJ is funding. It's funding that is irritating us beyond belief because we're not seeing the results of it. And especially in the day before we want to know what you're going to spend on it. You go 25 million per annum thereafter. For how long? So now this committee must accept and the committee's following must accept that for the next infinity we're going to be spending 25 million per annum for training. Can I just ask you, 650,000 samples you believe you will be taking per annum, correct? That's now on page 4 of your presentation. The costing of the analyzing of that samples you say is 580 grand, correct? Currently. Now I don't get to the same total that you get. So we take 650,000 samples. I believe it should actually even be more because Schedule 1 offences are very wide. It's not the definition of Schedule 1 offences is most probably makes up more than 50% of the crimes that are committed in South Africa. And we know that in general there's about 2 million crimes recorded per year. Oh, let's work on the 650,000. Now you analyze those samples. What are you estimating are the number of the 650,000 that you're going to be analyzing to get to that total? Because now you've given us a total of how many we're going to take, but you're not giving us a total of how many we presume we're going to analyze. First of all, I'm saying the 650 is not correct. I believe it's higher. Secondly, let's work on the 650,000. Let's say all 650,000 get analysed. If we accept that its action should be higher, then 580 rand times 650,000 does not give you that total. I got it here somewhere. I worked it out. It's much higher. It's much higher. And that's the problem. Why do we not have the correct figures here? I'll also have more questions. I just want to first say let's do this round, and I want Commissioner Ngumani, the responses are short and precise. Please, we're not going to take another round of questions.
Thank you, sir. There was the question on FIFM implementation. The FIFM rollout is going to start once the software development has been completed, and according to the plan, the software development will be completed by December. We have some pilot sites currently where the system has been implemented, but the full rollout will begin post the completion of the software development.
Excuse me, Jefferson. Can I come in here? Is it a contrary view now to the first presentation, General? Is this now this position? Because if you remember in the first presentation, the
was a different statement.
I think the clarity here is that the laboratory is one of the test sites, I believe, where it is implemented. Is that correct? Where it's already implemented. But I don't know why you're not just saying that, Commissioner Mani.
This is why I'm asking.
Because last time you made it clear to the committee, and I know from previous discussions, that PCAM is working at the laboratories. It's one of the test sites. So the members' questions are simply, are you now backtracking from what you said there last time? And the answer is simply no, they're not backtracking. It is one of the test sites. It's implemented at the laboratories. So PCAM is there. They're confusing the issue, members. Continue, please.
The steering committee will be formed now to ensure that the DNA bill, once it becomes law, all of the systems that are planned to support the bill are carried out according to the plan. That's why.
Commissioner, the question of the member was why only now? Well, it's been in the making for almost 4 years. But such is, and CJ is, and the technology part of it, are only starting with the steering committee on this issue in July of the fourth year. Brilliant. So if this bill should have been passed when it was first brought to Parliament, which was in 2009. Then we would have passed a piece of legislation and we would not have been able to implement it. Well, we still not been able to implement it. Can you explain to the members, the question was, why only now? Why is it that you as technology support are not working proactively?
I think the answer to that is that we have made a lot of mistakes in the past. I think we have to accept that. However, we have the bill now, and we are trying to, as much as possible, conform to the requirements. If the bill had been passed earlier, I am sure that we would have taken steps to support the bill much earlier. So I really cannot give an explanation as to why only now, except to say that we are now feeling the agency to actually support this thing from the system. Some of the system requirements have been in place, as I said earlier. It's a new, these two main systems, the LabWare and the database, the DNA database itself. And that is still going to take time, but we need to ensure that process is properly managed and there is a steering committee that can be accountable to the ITS, so that we ensure that there is delivery on those plans.
Just continue answering the questions. We'll take another round and I'll take comments afterwards as well. I know I'm also to respond to this, but let's continue.
The question of the persons are convicted by court and the person that will be, somebody that will be taken from correctional services. Can I allow General Shelley to explain that process? Because it's a...
Shelley? Thank you, Chairperson. The question was whether it is talking to the people already convicted or the current one that will be convicted. It actually speaks to both. Although those are in the detention facility, the person should go there, as well as the new income.
The total cost of the project, I think we have to give a total figure for that.
Commissioner Nkubani, that's why you are here. That is why we called you back a second time, is to give that total figure.
The reason why we explain where the costs come from is because the work was going to happen whether there was a spill or not. This is work that is ongoing. We were going to upgrade the cave and the creek. Because remember, we do have a pilot that's running for the DNA, but obviously not according to the bill, and it is not long yet. So the work was going to continue. So what we need to do, obviously, is to just add up the cost as we see that. And a lot of them are estimates, because we're talking how many people will be able to do this task and what sort of costing based on the rate per hour. So that's really the estimate. Where we know we have to buy a piece of software and hardware, yes, those costs are quite they're known to us.
Mr. Nkumani, when we break for lunch, which is going to be 12:45, you and your team are going to sit down, and I'm going to give you 5 minutes after we start, after lunch. And you're going to give us the total cost in terms of hardware, software, and then an annual running cost. Break it down to the simplest way. I mean, this is the second time that we're calling you to this committee to give us a costing. And still you can't give us a total. Continue, please.
So the question about the timeline, when are the systems going to be completed? As we've indicated here, they'll be completed at different times. The main system, which is the database itself, and therefore which are the big components of this, we foresee that it will take up to December 2017 to complete the configuration of the network, which is the longest. So all other systems will be completed, some next year, some the following year, and so forth. So, but to have the whole completion of the system, the database, and the network, we're looking at the 4-year period. The Israel lab and the lab work issue, I think, let me just clarify that as well. The changes to the current Israel lab, which we said here, the modernization of the Israel lab, we're looking at end of September. Sorry, end of June 2014. That is to ensure that the current system can carry us until we have the lab work and the database in place. We should be, as I said, we estimate that the forest town will have. So in the meantime, we've got to work with what we have. And as I said, the way it is done, the database is linked to the application, which means it is not here. I can take maybe half a day explaining that for architecture. But the fact of the matter is, it is an old system. It is not written according to the new architecture. So we'll have to upgrade it to a point where we can work with it in the meantime until we have the network in place. The total hardware, software, and the annual maintenance will work out of the chapter.
Honourable Kula Barnard, any other means can I get indication? I also still have some questions. Can I just ask before the Honourable Kula Barnard to ask it? Commissioner Shearsley explained to us the limitations of the current system that is in place. The current one, to strengthen the limitations, so that we have an idea of what are we working with for the next 4 years.
Jay, the current system is called the ESL that I'm referring to. It was designed to manage a limited capacity of samples, which samples was not going to be, I think at the time of design, about 10 million. during the advancement of the technologies in the DNA environment, as well as the new platforms, as well as the language they speak about, it, whether it is the data ease or the programming languages, the compatibility is no longer suitable. What must now happen to be able to accommodate the data that will be generated, as well as the information, as the migration and everything happens, the system has been scoped to say it will not be fit for purpose. It will either need a complete replacement, or it will take a lot of resources to redevelop it into the system that will be then able to take up that less data, as General Warren has explained. It is in that process, in that estimated time that he is referring to in the 4 years, to say how many other systems has it integrated within the lab, because there are different processes, like the evidence recovery process, the actual processing of the DNA sample, and the actual loading into the database, which has been using the same system, custom designed in the laboratory in our country with our products. But it is no longer sufficient, that's where the complexity lies. Now when you introduce labware as well as codes, it is those that it will be able to interpret.
I want to know what is the limitation. In other words, what are you going to be able not? What are you not going to be able to do in this 4 years? And it's important. Sorry, let me just finish. It's important for us as members to know that, because if we, and for the drafters to listen to this as well, because if we need to have a transitional arrangement, even around the type of drugs, then we need to say that. So we need to know what is the limitations of using the current system for the next 4 years. Because the steering committee is only going to be established on the 31st of July.
Chair, the major one is the capacity, the data storage, the data handling. A number of processes that will be implicated there will be the terms of the processing of samples. For example, we have committed for processing samples within 92% within 88 working days. With the current system and the way it processes the data that is generated, it may just be that it will be 92% within 60 working days, because now the system will not be able to accommodate it. So we will never meet the timeline. We will not be able to report in the, it has ripple effect in the number of other processes, not just for the reference index in the database, but also for the, all the types of processing of the manual samples for court recording. So we will generate backlogs again in the process.
Exactly why I wanted you to tell us what the limitations is, because then we need to make provision for it within the transitional arrangement. Because if we then know that it's going to take too long to do so, we need to put it in the transitional arrangement, so that we as politicians, not in a year's time, start attacking you for things taking twice as long as it should. So I really, you know, it frustrates me to no extent that we've got to come up with this. So, about my questions was not answered yet. They just answered my two questions quickly.
Thank you, Chair. The question was the total figure that's contained or reflected in the document. Can I refer back to the committee to 4.1, in where we made the breakdown for paragraph 4.2, correct, page 4, the question was referring to. The question was, the 650 does not amount to the APU. Is it correct, Chair? Perhaps maybe let me answer the first question first. Did we budget for this, for the samples? Yes, Chairperson, we did budget for it in the forensic awareness initiative, taking into consideration that if the bill is just to be passed, we are not now going to say there was no budget for it. But if it doesn't pass, what is the use in the money for in terms of the initiative within the environment? So we did plan for it. The 80 million which is targeted will process about 133,000 in the remainder of the financial year. It is costed for. This reflection now will estimate the total that will be processed within this figure. So it's my apologies, I didn't indicate in brackets that the 80 million as of this going forward will be taken for how much it will then process. The next figure where it will be, it shows the indicator, we are anticipating to cost 650 samples. These will amount to an estimated 390 million rand. In terms of the processing, so it was not an error, it was just for the interim purposes, as well as in the training there to say, if it passes now, what is your state of readiness? So that was taken care of, but it has been budgeted for as such, with also the proviso, what if not, so that it is still not surplus expenditure or also. That was the part on the training.
The other part is check out in one of the thank you, Chairperson. The other part of the training, the question was the 20,000 until how many? The committee wanted to know how many of the police officials will be training. It was an agreement in the committee in the previous round that we would like to have all the police officers trained. However, we will prioritize the training first with the priority groups to be able to implement the bill. And hence we have set first the detective service. The detective service is the total figure of 25,000. We shall have covered them within the first year and a half. And then the rest of the staff according to their categories. If it grows to 180,000, that is the capacity of staff, we will train 180 people so that they are ready. Because we are working with HRC to also implement the system within the basic training schedule. So we just didn't now know what is the total that will cover for the rest of the police officials because they are not now a priority in this sense. When we revise the total costing, we can take that into consideration.
I can tell you that it's going to take you 9 years to train all such members. 9 years. If you do it at 20,000 a year. And at that cost of 25 million, we're talking about 2.5 billion just for training. According to your own figures. Minus new questions. Honourable Kulabata?
Yeah.
Honourable Mulabatsi?
Chair, I think from my side, I want to say that the SAPs has got to accept our deep skepticism and frustration. Sir, General Gavani, you are the same gentleman who assured us, I lost count, was it 6 years ago or 10, assured us they would be used e-docketing and scanning and sending dockets straight to court.
I've got to jump to his defence here. He wasn't in that position.
Well,
at that point.
Your division. And here we sit all these years later, it just hasn't happened. So that was, you know, a few tens of millions. We're now talking about hundreds of billions, and we're supposed to sign off on something that with blanks, and we don't have totals, and this is the second attempt at doing this. And I just don't see that there's any point at all in processing a bill if we have absolutely no idea if the SAPs are able to implement it. I mean, second-hand goods bill took 5 years just to write the regulations. No station I go to even knows about it. The fingerprint bill they've never heard of. Half the sexual offences bills are a total mystery to the stations. This committee works day and night to produce really kind of world-class legislation. But the SAPs hasn't got the act together sufficiently to implement it. Now, see, I put it to you, are we wasting our time here? Because we work so hard, and we get this every single time, with every single presentation that comes to us, and then we ask again, but you said you were going to do it, what do you mean? We go to stations, we say, what do you mean you don't know about this legislation? Never heard of it. We are going to sign off on a multi-billion rand exercise. And I have no confidence in my own heart that it's going to get off the ground within the next decade or the next. If they can't scan a docket, and we heard they were using ink that meant the scanned dockets were all blank, if they can't even get that right, are we now going to be wasting, chucking billions of rands of taxpayers' money down the drain? I have a horrible feeling that's exactly what we're about to do. And I was the biggest backer of this book in this committee. I'm not happy.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. My question is on the site visit that you are going to undertake to Botswana in Mauritius. How did you select these two countries when there are so many countries that are better models? How did you select these two? Thanks,
Chairperson. Chairperson, may I just want to put a statement here, Chairperson, before I ask a question. We are discussing the bill that we're supposed to pass around about towards the end of this month or next month. Now, if you look at the costing of this bill, it seems as if some of the costing is not
it's not in our budget. Where the money will come from? That's the first question. The second question, Chairperson, I heard the Major said that they will train a bit in pieces of the police service personnel. That means, are you sure, therefore, it will take, or let me ask a question, how long it will take for only detectives, just target detectives, just tell us how long it will take to finish detectives, to train the detectives, only detectives, let alone the whole members of the subs, just the detectives, how long it will take to train them, and how much it will cost them. Thank you very much.
Hello, George.
Just one question, Madam Chair. I think I will reserve some of my questions. Last time when we talked about training, there was this issue that they're going to be trained by the Department of Health.
Yeah.
We made a request that they must discuss with us because we didn't see the need, because most of the people are going to be trained as police, and the police have got facilities. We asked if this training cannot be done, because we are imagining just the police for another issue, and can we be given a report as to what happened in that process?
Obviously, they will speak to it. I'll give them an opportunity to give their presentation as well as correctional services. Can we just finish with this part of it? I also still have a few questions. Why are we still looking at salt? You yourself say it's a fringe system. It's got no proven record. Who's got this interest in it?
Supply chain.
Who's building a house where?
Supply chain.
I want to have an answer on this issue because I want to know why are we still looking at it? Why do we think that a system that is working in 70 other countries is not good enough for South Africa? Why do we want to look at salt? And don't come with, it should be adapted to, their codes must be adapted to South African circumstances and what our needs are. That it needs to be done for every single country that it's been rolled out to. We're not unique in that sense. And my information is that it takes them exactly 2 weeks to do that. 2 weeks to adapt the system to the South African needs. What is the cost of soil? And then again, can you, you know, this 500,000 that is mentioned for this site visit to Botswana and Mauritius.
Why Mauritius?
Why are we not bringing people here to assist us? I don't mind, I mean, 500,000 in the billions of rand that this bill is going to cost us, it's fine. But there's a document that you yourself, Sita, have developed that said South Africa will be irresponsible to go any route other than the CODIS system. Sita wrote that document. I've got a copy of that document. So what changed that we will now not be irresponsible to consider another system? I've got to ask again, who's building a house where? Tell us why you still want to go this route of another system. Sita must maybe explain to us what changed. Why suddenly it's more important to look at another system. Or if Sita didn't change their mind, they must tell us. Then it's such that's turning the knife, and I'm not surprised then. I'm not surprised at all. Thank you.
It's a supply chain.
Supply chain.
One question I didn't address in the last round was who internal effects for me to including theta. It will be integrating PMS, private services, the enterprise program management office, which will be our interface to the ATF, strategic management within FEPS, and so those are the members of the steering committee.
But then, Madam, just one point. Then what is difficult? Why it takes so long to if it's an internal committee? What is difficult in setting up the committee and to do the work?
Set up the committee today or on the 31st of July should have been set up 4 years ago. That's the bottom line. So the few days is not going to make a difference. Let's just continue, please. Go.
Thank you. We have drawn up the terms of reference for the committee. So the committee is ready to start its work. All we have made it must drive the implementation plan. The question of why Mauritius or Botswana, I was making an example here. I was not saying definitely we are going there. I was saying that perhaps in the local...
Commissioner Mbani, members, can I ask for order, please? Let's just listen to the answers, please.
These are countries that are in close proximity, where we can even drive to Botswana and have a session. And the reason why we want to do that is to just to benchmark, to see what is the process of customization of the system, what are the problems, what can we learn from them. That's really why. Chair, the question of why are we still looking at SOL? Quite honestly, that's a question I've asked myself. Because I was told that there are two systems. There are two systems on the table, and I was told that the SOL system, in fact, that is the statement I made last time, that SOL has already been customized to our requirements, which is actually not the case. We are at the same on par between SOL and CODIS. So for me, the unknown with SOL is that I have not seen it anymore. So the question of why are we still looking at it, I was told that the system is here already. It was given to us. We didn't have to pay for the software. We only pay for the customization.
Jefferson, I'm not attacking the general, but you see, the general is doing the presentation. If you say that I was told, who told you?
Supply chain.
Who told you? Because you see, you can't say I was told and then you are doing the presentation, because it should have brought that person who to answer the question that the chairperson is asking. Because now you are implicating yourself and you are shooting that person that told you. Unless you tell us who told you.
He's an honest policeman. Only honest policeman. He's telling the truth.
Continue, please, and answer the members' questions. Interesting situation.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the system, we have the system, it was given to us. And the plan was obviously to roll out the system, but the question of whether final code is, that is the question we discussed in the last meeting with CETA, and CETA recommended that we roll out the code.
Answering the members' question, who was saying to you that we need to look at both? You see, the problem is, we know from experience with SEPs, and that's why members are asking this question,
right.
Especially when it gets to IT. IT in building environment seems like...
Heretical.
Maybe in the next life I must work in one of them as well. Be able to buy beach house or something. The fact of the matter is, we know from experience that SEPs will tell you, we get a system for free, but we only have to pay for making it adhere to our needs. Then that needs, and the cost of that becomes more than the cost of a system in itself. That we know. We know it from experience. We know from experience from the forensic science lab that they were given machines that in the end cost so much to run that they still continue to do things manually. A donation needs no freelance. There's no, nothing like that. We should know that. What is the estimated cost of the adapting the system, the solve to the South African need? What is the cost?
Which again, I think Jefferson, the statement that has been made about the free software that we get and the implementation costs that arise afterwards, it's very true. Again, it's all very true of governance. We will have a situation where a lot of the projects, and I can tell you that the solve was given under the PTO of contract.
Oh, no.
Are there any more questions? I still have, but I don't know what the use of asking me is at this stage. I want to make it clear, Commissioner Nkwane, yes.
It will take 18 months.
because they detected that the priority, but that was becoming clearer when the national health laboratories provided breakdown as to how they would approach the change. So within the 18-month period, from the date of implementation, they were able to be able to. Thank you.
Commissioner Gubani, you're going to come back after lunch and I'm literally going to give you 5 minutes because we want to get into the bill to give us totals, etc., etc. But I am going to put a small committee together of the committee members who's going to sit down and write specific questions of clarity that we want on these things. And we want them in a written form, so that we have a record of the answers. So we will do that within the next day, and we will get it by Friday at the latest, and we want the answers by no later than next week, Wednesday. We've now done all this work, so it shouldn't be too difficult to get it. Members, I think in summary of this part of the meeting, it's clear that we're still not satisfied. Things are just too all over the place. For instance, one of the questions I would like to know is all this and thing, when will it be implemented? Because if it's not implemented in time, then everything else shifts as well. The unique ID, the labware, everything, it shifts. But the unique ID, when is it going to be implemented? There's no date there. There's no deadlines in your processes for these things. So members are quite correct in their concern that we might say in 2014 we're going to have a fully fledged system running with no constraints for the laboratory to continue to do their work, only to find that in 2014 we're still waiting for the unique ID. And it's not, what I'm saying is not impossible, because we're still waiting for e-docket after how many years? So we will be drafting questions that we want specific answers on. In writing, next week Wednesday, we will try to get those questions to you even before Friday. Can I now hear from Correctional Services and then from Health in terms of your responsibilities of in terms of the bill and also your readiness, your concerns, and then also a few minutes for questions from members on that, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. We do have a presentation on our issues relating to the DNA bill, but with your permission I'd like to just highlight some of the slides and just dive straight into the issues without losing any of the content there. For us, in DCS, we've looked at the bill in terms of two very distinct phases. So the first phase would be the kind of backlog that we would have to deal with. So it's the issue of those that are sentenced within our facilities that whose DNA would need to be taken. Very distinct from the second phase, where if all is implemented, such officials would be taking all of the samples. So the people that come into our system, all samples should already have been taken, which limits the amount of people within our system that we would have to take samples of. Now, from DCS perspective, at all points did we highlight the fact that maybe if we could go to slide 5 straight, it shows the reason why we have always said we are not able to deal with the backlog of people within our system. So that's not the slide 5 dealing with the nurses in DCS facilities. Yes, there we go. So we're looking here only at this is the implementation. There you go. So what we have here is our total number of operational correctional facilities at 239, sentenced offenders at 108, our total DCS population at 151. DCS nurse posts are at 990, of which 122 are vacant. So it is, if you look at this slide, in conjunction with the fact that the bill provides that only people of the same gender may take samples of those they're taking samples from, it would be very difficult for us, or it could be done, but would take a very long time for us to deal with the backlog. From this, we within a task team had also discussed then going forward, because that is where DCS has seen its role. Going forward, where a small number of people, where either samples needed to be taken again, or people that were missed as they were coming into the system would be taken. We then are looking at training all our 838 nurses for a possibility that somebody within our facilities may need to have a sample taken. And once we were looking also at the training issues and the cost of training, the cost of training our nurses for that potentiality would amount to about the $1.2 million. And then bearing in mind that if nurses are not constantly taking these swabs, we need to look at retraining, this increases that cost. Within the team, we had then discussed if there are 20,000 police officials, and that number may have changed, that are being trained, spread throughout the country, it is a very simple matter to take those police officials into our facilities and allow them to take those swabs. It would deal also with issues of storage. Once those swabs are taken, they can immediately then be carried to the labs together with by the SAS officials. So based on those analyses, we go to the slide we were originally on the setting out the implementation. The task team had actually looked at what it would take for a team of two SAS officials to go through all of the sentenced inmates. 8,000 is the figure that we used there, and it would be done over a period of 12 months. That this calculation was done for us by the Criminal Justice Review, but we've looked at it and we would agree with that. The remand detainees are listed below. We have not included them in this because our remand detainee population is extremely fluid. There are some that stay with us for a long time, but mostly remand detainees are with us for 3 months and then leave. So the process of SAT then taking those samples would in fact deal with that particular backlog. What we have then said is that from a DCS perspective, our role, this is on slide 9, would be far more effective by availing inmates at certain times for taking off swabs by SAS officials, that we then make available that space for that sample to be taken, and we ensure that the taking of that sample is captured on the file of the inmate, making it able for us to determine how many people in our facilities have had their swabs taken and how many still need to be taken. The other issue, and I apologize for the error on the type, amending the A and R system, it's not the A7R system. It's the admission and release system that we have within DCS. That's not the correct slide. It's my slide 9. There you go. So that's the A&R, amending the A&R system to include information on the taking of sample. This is both in terms of the dealing with the backlog, but also going forward. It's something that we've done, for example, when the J7 warrant was amended to include certain information. We then amend our admission and release system to include those things. So if the J7 warrant will say this person's sample has been taken, we include that onto our system and we'd be able to say how many people do and how many people do not have not had their swabs taken. The other role that we see for the DCS then is to ensure that information would form part of the IJS transversal once you connect to it, so that it's simply a matter of saying our systems that we need to connect to the IJS transversal will then also include information on the taking of buccal samples of inmates within our system. So in relation to that, what we would then like to see for the bill going forward, certainly looking at the issues of our capacity and also involving nurses in issues that are primarily of an investigative nature, we would then recommend that the bill is amended to reflect that. The nurses that we have, the capacity is low, but also to then have them called to a court to explain whether the chain of evidence was followed is certainly are on parole or correctional supervision. There's currently around 63,000 that are in our community correctional system that are not within our facilities, so there would need to be a different way of approaching how those samples are taken. But certainly we think a group that should be taken into account in the school. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I think correctional services is saying what this committee has said when we met previously, that it's not fair on correctional services to expect them to be doing what SAP should be doing. And I'm actually glad that we've brought you here for that very specific reason, because at that stage it was a feeling from our side that you might not have the capacity and that it might not be the right way to go, and you've now confirmed that for us. And I think when we deal with the bill going forward, we will have to make those changes. I think also it's a very important point that's made around the correctional supervision people that we haven't talked about. That should then be included in the bill as well. Thanks for that. Members, any questions or clarity on this, or are we satisfied? Honourable George?
Just one clarity. She talked about low quality of nursing. I don't know what you mean, because I put the nursing in this country in terms of their training. Trained at the standard that is accepted internationally. Can you explain to me what you said when you talk about low quality of nursing?
Just before you do that thing, can you also just explain to us the issue around the remand detainees? I understand the problem that it's fluctuated all the time. What is it that you're suggesting around a remand detainees? If you could just give us an indication. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I may not have spoken clearly. I wasn't talking about low quality nurses, but just the low capacity that we have within our facilities.
Okay.
So, no, I certainly wouldn't indicate that the capabilities of it. In terms of the remand detainees, if we amend our system to reflect whether vital samples have been taken from remand detainees, we would then see, in terms of the turnover of remand detainees, if they are coming back into our system, then we can see who has had their samples taken, who hasn't. If we then have an amount of people, people that are staying longer, particularly those that stay with us 2 years and longer, and we have figures on those, there's about currently around 2,030 people 2 years and longer. We would then need to make a plan to have people come in, have their samples taken, and as we would do with extensions.
You see, what we're trying to clarify is you're not saying they must be excluded. That's not what you're saying.
No.
Remind me, that's not what you're saying. You're saying for the system to work, you need to be able to see whether this person's DNA has been taken previously or not, because of the fact that it takes a high turnover in the detainees. Am I correct?
There's two things. One is, yes, we would need something, and the J7 is a perfect tool that indicates to us whether or not somebody's sample has been taken, and then we could provide a list of who still needs their sample taken. But what we're also saying is that they don't need to be a priority. So if we're dealing with a backlog, it should be the sentence it makes that we are dealing with in terms of the backlog, because the remand detainees may already be coming from SAPS with their samples taken. So they shouldn't be excluded, but they shouldn't be the first group to go to.
I just want to get clarity on the sorry members, but we need to get clarity in terms of the redraft that we need to do around this issue as well. Once the bill is implemented, those that go to your facilities, it is expected that their samples would have been taken, if they qualify, that their samples would have been taken at the police station already.
Yeah.
Now what we want to do is just get the one offenders within correctional services who have not been sentenced yet. Those are the ones that we are concerned about. The ones currently there. So I think we must just, technically, I hope you're listening to this as well, so that we just differentiate here what needs to be done and what it is that they are asking for. Yeah. The conviction is fine. That's not a problem. It's about these that are still awaiting trial. But you're also going to get some coming back who's already been convicted and they're now arrested for a new crime, and that you also need to be clear on, that SAPS must indicate to you that this person's sample has been taken for the previous case.
Because if there's nothing more there, then I want to give over to help. If you can introduce yourselves and then just give us a rundown. Can I also ask you to please explain to members why health should be giving the training, because that was the major question last time.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mimi. I'm the HR Executive from the National Health Laboratory Services. Accompanying me here today is Bongi Juma, who is our Project Manager of Quality Assurance and Biobank, and Melanie Boris, who is currently our National Training Manager for the NHS as well. First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you today. And without further ado, go into the presentation. Okay, the presentation will deal with three components. To give you just some background on the NHS, it talks about our understanding of the business needs regarding the SAP request, and then it talks around the training program that we will be putting in place. The National Health Laboratory Service is a public health laboratory service within a network of labs across South Africa. Its activities comprise diagnostic laboratory services, research, teaching and training, reagents and diagnostic media, as well as the production of sera for anti-snake venom to the NHLS holding company, South African Vaccine Producers. At the core of the NHLS is our next generation of pathology excellence that supports the mandate of the Department of Health. So technically, it is our mandate to produce the next generation of pathologists for public health right across South Africa. NHLS was established in 2001 by an Act of Parliament to provide diagnostic pathology laboratory services to the national and provincial health departments. It is the largest diagnostic pathology laboratory service in South Africa. We have just over 7,000 employees that we have employed across South Africa. We have roughly around 349 laboratories across 9 provinces in SA, and we serve 80% of the South African population. We also train pathologists and medical technologists in conjunction with university medical schools as well as universities of technology. That's just an indication of our footprint right across South Africa, and as you can see, every dot on the map indicates a laboratory, roughly around 324 labs countrywide. And across all 9 provinces. In terms of our focus here today, just some background, we have had several meetings and workshops with SAT, in particular Brigadier Smith, so a lot of what we've been put here today and what we're presenting here today has been informed by these discussions. We understand that there is amendments to legislation in South Africa around the criminal law for forensic procedures. Amendment Bill 2012 was provided for the collection of occult smears from police officials who are not crime scene examiners but have undergone training and deemed competent according to the National Health Act of 2003 as prescribed by the Minister of Health. The importance of this training is to establish and regulate the administration and maintenance of the National Forensic DNA Database of South Africa, to ensure that there's competent trained authorized officials on the collection of buccal samples, and of course alignment to international legislation. The NHS has a learning academy, which we were then approached by SAT to tender a proposal to deliver this training. Our academy offers more than just laboratory services, or the NHS in general offers more than just laboratory services. Our learning academy has a wealth of subject competencies and intellectual capabilities, and is committed to facilitate not only the employees, but also citizens of South Africa. The NHLS Learning Academy has the technical competence and capacity to roll out this project at a national level. Our success stories in promoting learning and development, just as a matter of interest, currently we have over 1,500 people in training, and that would be technicians, as well as technologists, as well as registrars. We've also been awarded over 2 years, over 3 million rand in CETA grants, which we utilized to train roughly just below 100 phlebotomists countrywide. We believe very firmly in the NHS values, and that's caring and creating a better South causes are advocating leadership in a number of disciplines right across the world. Our training and resources of people are paramount, so we focus a huge amount of technical expertise in the training of staff. We've achieved a competent clinical lab footprint right across South Africa. Our capacity and competency to assess and develop learners is really one of the best so far. This just gives you an indication of our academy. In the academy, we have a number of different schools. So, for example, we have a school of general management, which focuses on management development, and then, of course, business leadership. We're also very, very pro on governance and ensuring efficiency in our governance processes, because we do believe that that is core and fundamental to ensuring streamlined processes as well as effective reporting. We have a school of laboratory management, where this essentially will sit under, this training will sit under the school of laboratory management, because it takes care of technical and clinical training. We've got seminar and conference management school, and we have a school, NHLS School of Learning, which is specific around training programs geared for the NHLS staff. We're also very pro on e-learning because we believe in automating our system so that there's efficient learning programs in place. In that way, we can also streamline costs. And then, of course, we have an assessment center. In terms of understanding the project scope, the NHLS Learning Academy will provide training interventions to police officials in groups of 20 on the collection of bottle smears at a venue that is within 140-kilometer radius from the cluster police station. This is the scope that has been given to us. The competency assessment will be conducted following the training and a certificate of competence issued once the police official has been deemed competent. The implementation of the training plan, the training will be extended to approximately 100,000 police officials over a five-year period, and the national rollout of 20,000 police officials per annum at different venues across the country. An indication of our timelines of our training program. The first action starts with an evaluation of the training program, including the learning material. It's very important that as the NHLS and SAT, we work together as a partnership. So it's important that we sit down and identify what the components of the training should be, and that it represents a fair amount of both technical as well as theoretical knowledge. So we anticipate the evaluation of this training program taking place at least 4 weeks from the sign-up of the Memorandum of Understanding. We will then put together a pilot training program, which we anticipate implementing 10 days from evaluation. And then, of course, implementation of the Gauteng rollout, 21 days from the pilot program. And then national implementation and rollout anticipated 90 days from Gauteng rollout. Implementation of training for the financial year 13-14. The pilot we anticipate to take place around the middle of October. We will start training in November in Gauteng. We've indicated that December may not necessarily be a good opportunity to do training because of holiday seasons and leave programs, but that's subject to discussions and agreements. And then, of course, because it's quite a short term between now and the end of the financial year, we've anticipated training 3,000 police officers, officials by the end of March. And then, of course, post-implementation feedback. For us, it's very important that as we continue the training to get input from the various attendees, because if there's any way that we can streamline and change the training program to make it a lot more efficient, then that would be the aim. And that's why the post-implementation feedback is important. These are statistics in terms of the breakdown of national rollout per region. The reason why we're starting with Gauteng is because our understanding is that that represents the greater composition of detectives, and it is also an area where we have the highest crime statistics. So that was the rationale behind starting with Gauteng. But once again, as indicated, it is a partnership, so that will be subject to discussions with SAP and where they believe the focus should be. Just to give you some indication of what the learning program will comprise of, there are two components. The first component is around the theoretical aspects, and the second component is around the practical aspects. Section A is training and competency of collection of buccal smears. These will incorporate the background of DNA and buccal cells, the workflow of the buccal smear collection to DNA profile search, demonstration on procedure for use of kit in the collection of aqua specimens, the approach and explanation to the suspect, how do you position it, preparation of the workstation, the aquasphere collection kit, completing the paperwork accurately, and health and safety risks as well as possible diseases. Then section A continued, we'll also focus on the collection of the samples and actually how you do it, understanding the chain of custody, the procedure in the use of the kit, repacking, sealing, and storage of the kit with the buccal smears, and the supply of buccal smear kits and stock control, as well as the competency assessment. Section B is where SACS will play a leading role and give us and provide us with input, and this will cover the following areas. What is forensic science? So that we create a culture of understanding across all attendees in terms of the context of why this is being done and why it's so important. The National DNA Database and its implications and what its purpose is going to be. The DNA forensic awareness, and then questions and answers, as well as a closing and feedback session. So that's what we anticipate will be taken care of in Section B. In conclusion, we are currently revising the MOU which we received, so there are a number of processes that need to take place in order to finalise that. From an NHLS perspective, we would like to say that we're really, really committed. We are very excited to work on this opportunity with SAS. We believe that we are best geared to do so. We have a database of health professionals. We have skilled health professionals. It's what we do. It's our core business. We are very excited about possible future opportunities of working together. We believe that this is a great opportunity to contribute to social responsibility and make a difference. We have the capacity and capability to deliver quality training, and we believe that we will jointly make a difference and contribute to a safer South Africa.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Members, any questions or clarity? I think it answers a lot of our questions, but I just wanted to find out, Commissioner Shezi, you said the MOU has been signed. Here we talk about the MOU not been signed. Not. Okay. I think when it's signed, the committee needs to see a copy of that as well so that we can understand exactly what has been agreed on. Any questions? Can I just make a comment, maybe? While we have these people at the course when they're doing these training and the SAPS input part of it, I think this is also the opportunity where you should also talk about training on the Act itself, because it's not here if you look at Section B, so that we don't come with another round of training, and especially as we roll it out, obviously you're going to have training on the Act for your ordinary police officers as well, but I think specifically for these guys who aren't going to train. Anything else on rule of the late George?
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the things, but not pages, but it's a project scope. There's a competence assessment will be conducted following the training and certificate. Now, I think probably someone left to think what will happen to those who fail. I'm not assuming that all those who are conscious are going to pass. What's going to happen to those who fail and so on? Because my understanding was that we would like all police to have this understanding. And I think, Madam, also it has answered our question, because from the presentation it's clear that it must be done at their facilities. I don't believe, from what I heard, that the SAS has this number of facilities to do the work. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. I heard from the presenter that there are 2,000 and less. Are they all functioning properly? And there are no bedrolls. Why I'm asking this question is because the case will be thrown out because of the bedrolls, because of the training and so on and so forth, because people won't be capable to be trained on time. And then if there are backlogs,
and we've got sharp lawyers like Karan Bhubani here. The case will be thrown out because of the people can't stay more than 7 days without qualifying the person to be in court or whatever. Are all these labs functioning? My question: are all these labs functioning properly and everything is on board?
Because he's the most senior member in the committee, I didn't want to interrupt him. I think you're confusing the labs and the roles of the labs here.
Yeah.
Because they don't work with the backlogs and criminal part of it.
No.
So just that by the way. Honourable Kulavan, do you still want to say something?
No, Chair. I mean, I saw the last debate. I thought, excuse me, I know he's absolutely out of the left field in the wrong direction, but we do have an endless issue with blood test results and alcohol results. You know, the courts throw out drunk driving cases all the time because of your labs. So we'll pretend you are not involved with those labs and we'll move on, shall we?
I think to be fair to them, they yet speak about the training part, and if we need to engage with them on another issue at some point in time, we can certainly do so, but I don't want to blindside them from the side as well. Yes, you still want to make a comment?
Yes, another one. There is also a difference between NHLS labs and forensic labs. Ours, we don't test blood alcohol, so they are not big laws on us. But just basically on NHLS labs, all our labs also have quality management systems, so we don't have backlog, and we also have a disaster management plan. If let's say one lab has a problem, we logistically can move another sample to the nearest lab. So everything gets taken off, so because most of our labs are accredited, so you can be rest assured everything is covered. Thank you.
Commissioner Shendi, the question from Honourable George, he took off pass one, pass all. can you respond to that, please?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Nidhi to take that question. Thank you. Honourable Chair and Honourable George. No one fails an assessment. Competency is about the knowledge, the skill, the actual ability to take the buckle clear, and of course assessing the attitude. So there will be a theory question here, but in addition there will be a practical. So the practical will involve a direct observation of someone taking the buckle clear. And if they have done incorrect steps, we would retrain them on site so that there would be corrective procedure and then we would deem them competent. So there'd be a reassessment. So there's no such thing as a failure.
An old man like Dobu is not verified. You can train it 10 times.
You can train
it 10 times.
I don't think it will. Perhaps if that is the case, yes, we will. Yes, we will. It's all about successful policy training.
Well, thank you very much for the answer. Honourable George, they were saying that you will even be able to pass. but I do think that from your answer there's something very important, because it's something that we are concerned about, is the attitude when taking
the attitude.
And I think we need to know from such a side that if they come back to you and they say this person does not have the right attitude and despite retraining still have that attitude, that person will no longer be considered. Because that person will then end up being a case going to Commissioner Jacobs and his team for litigation at some point during his career. And we don't want that either. So I think the question still is relevant in terms of, and specifically the failure in terms of attitude that might be the problem. Can you just tell us also, I'll come and get you an opportunity, what is the unit cost of a buckle swab and what is the unit cost per trainee?
Okay, thank you, Chair. I will add to it and then have Melanie give any information you'd like to. Essentially, currently the tips are around 168 rand per unit, and the total cost of the training per candidate or per delegate is 1,475 rand. This includes training packs, it includes the test kits, it includes refreshments, venue costs, experienced facilitators who are trained in healthcare and healthcare professionals, cost of assessments, as well as competency tests, as well as certification. That's the total cost.
Is there any additional cost that you have to, that is not reflected in this development of the pools, etc., that's going to cover such as account?
No, Chair, everything's included in that cost.
Perhaps let me go back to the last question you posed, which is the development cost. When we had the discussion, the initial amount of the 3,000 people and the cost there also took into account the developmental stages and so on. So at the beginning, the cost may be higher than if it continues to be rolled down. So it may be less. That's what we had understood in the discussion. So there isn't any perceived escalation relevant, but it will be the decrease. I wanted to talk to what the chairperson was saying about the attitude also in terms of the training.
Yes.
When the systems are updated from the ITS point of view, where the things that the chairperson was talking to, we will be able to link the code or the barcode of the person taking the sample, the IO chain, with the outcome of the sample process. So we can always tell who is the problematic officer once the systems are up to date. And then we can be able to then throw the competency and put corrective measures.
That could happen in your lifetime.
In fact, Madam Chair, I was going to suggest that the attitude test, especially with the present type of police we have, because majority of them will fail. If you test, which...
No.
Yes, majority of them will fail.
No, you can't say that. I think the problem with Commissioner Shea's answer is that this is after the fact that she's answering. My question was more, when they send you a report of this 20 that I've trained to you today, and they say to you, despite the person being competent to do this, we don't believe this person is the right person to be doing it because of their attitude.
That
such then take that in cognizance, and what would such then do?
Yeah, what would happen? Yeah. Okay.
Part of the evaluation we will not specify incompetence because the discussions are we will be kept informed of what happens in those instances. The proficiency test will not be allowed with a person who is problematic if there can be a number, a member like that. But we don't perceive that there might be, but you
will. Thank you very much. I am going to allow the CITAR Commissioner Kubani, CJS Health and Correctional Services to leave if you want to leave, and CJS Commissioner Kubani and the CITAR, I suggest find a room and start working on the costs for us so that you can be back at 2 o'clock and just give us that 5 minute issue. And whoever needs to crack the whip there, please do so that we can get clarity on this issue. And then I'm going to ask the ones that left for you guys to move in here, please, so that we can start with the bill itself. Thank you very much once again for the presentation. Health, correctional services, we appreciate it. We will thank these guys when they come back with an answer.
Don't talk about attitude.
Tell the attitude.